Okay. Is this on? Can you hear me? It's not on. Paul. Is that better? I don't. It's still.
You gotta talk louder, I think.
Talk louder. Is there a volume over there? Okay. As soon as everybody's done saying hi, that's okay. My name's David, and I'm an addict. And welcome. It's really great to see this kind of a turnout. Can you hear me in the back? Yes, good. Can you hear me in the front?
Yes.
All right. Okay. This is really quite an event, and the turnout was even more than I anticipated, although I was warned that it was going to be pretty good today. What we're celebrating here today is the 50th anniversary of the arrival of the Little White Book of Narcotics Anonymous in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Okay? That's pretty huge. And it happened, of course, right here at Eagleville, and we had them pull out the portrait of the man who was really responsible for allowing us to find a home here in 1969. That's Dr. Donald Ottenberg. And I'm, you know, not everyone here would have reason to know the history of this place, but he was the medical director here for a long time. And so I'll hit a little bit of the history of Eagleville, and as well as, I'm recording there too, as well as the history of NA and how these two things came together, this healing place of Eagleville Hospital and this healing force that found its way back from the West Coast in the form of a book called The Little White Book. So let me just give you a little history of NA, and there's no way to state it without some element of controversy, but the first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous was held in New York City at the Women's House of Correction, or Women's House of Correction?
Detention.
Detention. They weren't yet corrected, they were just detained. Women's House of Detention in New York City. And that was taken in there by a fellow named Danny Carlson. And Danny Carlson was an addict who had lived in New York and sought treatment 8 times at Lexington, Kentucky, the Public Health Service Hospital in Lexington, Kentucky. And on the grounds of Lexington, from about 1946 on, there was a meeting of a group called Addicts Anonymous that was started by a guy named Houston. And Danny goes in there on his 8th visit in 1949, and that's the trip that worked for him. So he goes back home, and he wants to start a fellowship. He wants to spread the word, and figures that, you know, he doesn't want to have the same initials as AA, so he wants it different from Addicts Anonymous, and he chooses the name Narcotics Anonymous. Meetings flourished very slowly in New York City, and there's a lot of historical material available about the fellowship at that time. He dies in 1956, and then suffice it to say that NA kind of shifts to the West Coast in the early 50s. And the first publication of what became the Little White Book was actually called the Buff Book, and it was published in 1957 in Soledad Prison, and it had, I think it was only like 8 pages long, and it had a little brief compendium of what NA was all about. The version, I believe, Dan, would have been published in 1962 that ended up here in 1969. And a guy named Roy P., we did this on the 40th, and I just listened to the tape last night and this morning, and our first two speakers are no longer with us, Bobby M. and Roy P. And Roy was out in the West Coast in 1969, and he went to an AA convention, and let it be known that his problem was drugs. And some people guided him to a group of addicts who were kind of involved in this startup fellowship called Narcotics Anonymous, and one of them was Jimmy Kay. And they gave him a number of books to bring back to the East Coast. And so Roy gets back here, and approaches a number of churches to try to find a place to start an NA meeting. And the doors were closed in his face. He knew a therapist who worked here. His name was Dick Yaff. And Dick had gotten sober in AA at Young Men's Club in Philadelphia. And he arranged a meeting between Roy and Dr. Ottenberg. And the first time that they met, Dr. Ottenberg didn't respond in any official way. And Roy was about to give up on it. And Danny said, let's take another run at Dr. Ottenberg. So they met with Dr. Ottenberg. And Dr. Ottenberg said, we're going to give you a place. Well, how important is that? I listened to a tape that I did with Bob M. last night as well. And I did that, I guess, 3 months before he died. And he talks about being up here in 1969. He was here for 40 days and went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in a small room at the main hospital building. That's pretty incredible. And if you know anything about the history of NA, it just wasn't anywhere else but here in Southern California. So I think that we're pretty blessed. And just briefly, Eagleville was initially founded in 1909. It was a hospital for tuberculosis patients. In fact, my grandfather was a patient here in the mid-20s for TB. In 1966, the government pulled their funding for TB because they weren't treating it the way they used to, where, you know, people would come up here and stay for a year or two. And they were treating it with medication. They were starting to have some success. And Dr. Ottenberg, you know, was left with a dilemma. He was the medical director. What are we going to do with this great facility? And he got the idea to make it a treatment center for alcoholics. And he, through his own initiative, and he really had to push against a lot of resistance, convinced the board of directors to admit alcoholics here in 1966. I think it was June of 1966. They unloaded their first bus of 18 patients from the Diagnostic and Relocation Center down in Philadelphia. In 1969, he gets another brainstorm and he says, you know, we're starting to hear about drug problems. You know, drugs are now becoming quite a problem. It was part of the culture, and it started out kind of recreationally, but it was pretty quickly devolving into a very widespread public health crisis, really, for young people getting involved in drugs. So he put together the idea that let's treat drug addicts and alcoholics in the same program. And that's what he did. He again went back to the board and was able to convince them to do so. So as a result, you know, it was rather fertile ground here for him to say, yeah, let's give this Narcotics Anonymous a shot. So that's what we're here today celebrating. I'm going to give you a little bit of the format. First of all, there's no smoking anywhere on campus. That includes outside. I don't know about vaping. I honestly don't know if they consider that smoking or not. But maybe in solidarity with your smoking brothers, you vapers can just not vape for 2 hours. Give that a shot. There are no photographs, even though I don't believe there are any patients in the room. If you're going to do photographs, please be up against the wall so there aren't pictures that capture anybody who's in the background. We don't want to violate HIPAA or, you know, any of the federal regulations dealing with patient confidentiality. Oh, good time. Perfect. Would everybody mind silencing their cell phones? Thank you. Time. Addicts like to talk, as you've seen over the last 5 minutes. And we have to have a time limit here today. The time limit is 7 minutes. Because what? Yeah. Well, it's 7 minutes. This, by the way, timekeeper is here. Her name is Lynn. Her last initial is V. And wait. Lynn is from New York, by way of Queens. And all I can tell you is she has a lot of vowels in her last name. All right? That's a warning.
Yes.
At 5 minutes, you're going to hear. Okay. At 7 minutes, she's going to go like this. And where she comes from, that has a whole different meaning, okay? So don't even try to be up here longer than 7 minutes. No filming and no recording. We are making a recording right now, and my goal is to have one usable copy of this that we can put out on the internet and people can access it. One of the problems we always run into is that people, especially when it comes to two brothers who were very involved in the early fellowship, Mike and Danny, for some reason everybody gets soft and gives us their last names. If you use last names, and I don't care whether they're alive or dead, please don't. Just don't use last names because I don't know how to edit anything. I barely know how to turn this thing on. But there's a little sign up here that says no last names. Okay, so please don't use last names. What else do we have? Okay, so what we're going to do is proceed by five-year blocks of time. That would be 69 to 74, then 74 to 79, 79 to 84, and then if we get to it, you know, 85 to 89. And I hope we do. You don't have to use 7 minutes, by the way. It's not in the format. If you sit down at 3 or 4 minutes, we're not going to call you back up here and say you have another 3 minutes. And if anybody says, I'm going to say this and then shut it down, we know what that means. You got another 10 minutes in you. We're not having it. Okay, there are a few items just for your, you know, to look at up here, historically significant. I'm not endorsing those. NA is not endorsing those, but they're pretty interesting references to NA on the East Coast, including in this book, kind of the most comprehensive history of NA, and he writes extensively about the Philadelphia region in the 70s. So with that, I believe that we're ready to throw it open. Again, five-year blocks of time. So, and we're going to do it chronologically. If you got, oh, this is critical. This is not about clean time. If you were in here in 69 and you were exposed to NA and you have something to say about it, please do. The fact that you went out and came back at a later date in the 70s or 80s, that's fine. This is not only for clean time. Does everybody understand that? If your exposure to NA occurred between 69 and 74, come up and tell us about it. What did you like about it? What was different about it? What didn't you like about it? We can handle that too. Whatever your experience was with Narcotics Anonymous. So with that, we're going to throw it open to anyone here between whose exposure was between the years 1969 and 1974.
I'm an act named Harry. So in early August 1969, my mother thought I had a problem. So she was looking for a place for me to go, and she heard about this place, and they were doing wonders with heroin addiction. So she made a phone call, and I think it was like either the 13th or the 14th of August that she got a call, and they had a bed open. Eagleville Hospital had a bed open for me. I said to my mother, let me have that phone because me and my friends are going to a little jazz concert in New York and I can't go in right away. And they said, well, listen, we have a bed for you. If you want it, it's yours. If you don't, we'll see you when you get around. So I said, okay, and I went in, and that little jazz festival turned out to be Woodstock. But I was only in here for about 2 weeks, and I caught hepatitis A or B from a dirty needle and went into convulsions, and they had to take an ambulance to Abington Hospital, and I was in quarantine for a couple of weeks there. So I wasn't here long, but the time I was here, they planted a seed. I was at that meeting that Roy brought here. So they planted a seed for me, and even though I wasn't ready, and it took me 37 years to get back here, it planted a seed, and I want to thank Roy, Eagleville Hospital, and everybody included for that.
Hey, Denny South Philly.
I'm only Denny.
Hello, everyone. Dennis D. I was admitted to Eagleville on January 19th of 1972 at the age of 19 after getting thrown off the methadone clinic at Broad Mars. Anyway, Eagleville had something called NA that was here. There was AA here, and guys from AA would come up in suits from all their home groups, and you know, me, I was a troublemaker and started, you know, didn't believe anything, and NA came up and they looked more like me, and I started to listen. You know, I had a hard time with the concept that they didn't do anything, you know, I kept on questioning, but I listened. But the most important thing from my exposure in NA during 1972, Eagleville here had a long-term program called the Candidate Program. And it was a six-month program that followed your inpatient. And at our clinic, Eagleville's clinic in Norristown, there was an NA meeting, which later became the Green Street meeting. But it was first at the clinic. And it was this woman, Jennifer L., took a few of us in the candidate program to that meeting, and there was Carl, and there was Ralph, and there was Bobby Mack, your brother, and you know, just a crew of guys, which were the basis of that NA group, and that was my real exposure, because, you know, the institutional meeting was great, but that meeting out there gave me a vision of men and a few women who were actually living in the community and making it, and they all had a couple of years, and I believed in it. Believed in it with all my heart, that if I didn't go back to Pollock Street, you know, downtown, that I could make it by staying up here and doing this thing with NA. Life had problems and there were some things that went on, but I won't get into that. That's my exposure, and I stayed with it as time went on. Thank you.
Hey, how y'all doing? I'm an alcoholic and addict, and my name's Jim B. I generally say my last name so that people know who I am and they can look me up out there, but since Dave gave those instructions, I'm going to abide by it, even though I've been a rebel all my life. My introduction to Narcotics Anonymous and, quite frankly, Eagleville Hospital was in December of 1969. I was a 17-year-old drug addict, alcoholic, in and out of prisons, ended up here. Quite frankly, I can't tell you a whole lot about what the NA meetings were about. I can't tell you what the AA meetings were about. I can't even tell you what the group stuff was about, because I had no sense of recovery on my mind at that time. I was trying to beat some charges, and I was trying to get back out on the streets as quick as I could, which I recall as I drove in, and I see there's a fence out there now along the drive, but somewhere in that time period, going in late December into early January, I trekked out across a muddy cornfield to head back down to Norristown, my hometown. Of course, I went back there for the drinking and drugs. I bounced around for a few years before, again, finding trouble with the law. I ended up in Greaterford for a couple of years, and I guess that brings me up to December of 73. Through a stroke of luck and some help from people in this program here, my brother, who has been mentioned a couple of different times, they got me on some kind of crazy pre-release program, and I ended up in the hallways of the old hospital building over here. I looked down the hallway one day to the candy machine at the end of the hall, and there was a big redhead kid that I knew from Norristown down there, which happened to be Dave F. We struck up renewed friendship, because we had both gone to the same high school. Through a series of events, my brother, who had been persistent at trying to 12-step me, came up to the hospital and asked the guy one final time. My brother always turns me down to go to a meeting. What should I do? And the guy says, give him another try. You never know if it'll work out for him. So in my guile, I bartered with my brother. I said, yeah, I would go to an outside meeting with him if he took my big red-headed friend. And he did. He agreed to it. We went to an AA meeting on the outside first. Then we went down to 13th and Ruscomb, one of the first outside meetings I'd ever been to, an NA meeting. They mentioned 1208 Green Street. When Dave and I were here, that meeting was kind of defunct. And with the help of two or three other people, Dave and I, and my good friend John sitting back there restarted the 1208 Green Street. So I've been around this program for a while, and I tell you, it's a great success. I came here, I didn't want to be recovered. I just wanted the pain to stop. I wanted the police to stop hounding me. I wanted everybody in my family to stop saying, don't you love us, and can't you do this? I wanted all that to stop. I didn't want to stop using or stop drinking, but those things I did want to stop. And through the help of a higher power and the NANA program, that has stopped. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maureen M. Hi, alcoholic addict. I'm really nervous, so I thought I would just tell what I remember. I came in June of 71, homeless, sick, and my mother, who was in Al-Anon, you know, talked to some people. I got in today, Incorporated, and I lasted 2 days today because I couldn't get up and do the chores. Back then, you worked your butt off in these places. And but I turned yellow as a canary. I had hepatitis. I had been sick out there for a while. I had been homeless. So long story short, my mother agreed to take me back in until I got better. And so one of her friends in Al-Anon had a guy from AA come after work every day, real nice guy, Denny F. And he would talk to me about the program. And there was no NA program in Philly back then. And so, long story short, you know, when I got better, I started making AA. And they told me at Northeast Club, look, just don't talk about the drugs. Just say you're an alcoholic, which I would have done anything. You know, they were pretty nice to me. There were some people in there that had children, you know, adult children who needed to come in as well. So they got together and introduced us to each other. And that's, I had met, that was through Jim S. I met his two sons, Mike and Danny S. And Roy P. as well. And then in September, Jim H. There were some AA meetings that welcomed us. There was the Saints group that brought in Duncannon, and it didn't matter what you were struggling with, you could go there, and we were welcome. But through Roy, we started NA in Philadelphia, and Jim can give you more of the details. It's hard to remember back all this time, but I know before Philly, we started at NA in Springfield, Delaware County, and then we actually started a meeting in Belmar, New Jersey. And then in 72, I think he said September 72, it was at 11th and, or 13th in Ruscomb. And then we also started one on the Boulevard there. I think it was like 9th and the Boulevard. Long story short, anyway, I left after 2.5 years to be a social drinker and back in the roundhouse again. So in 1980, I came back and I've been clean and sober since. Thank you. Yeah.
I'm Jim, I'm an addict. She doesn't look like she was in the roundhouse. I want to start off by mentioning a few people who aren't here today for various reasons, and primarily women in NA. There were some real, you know, pioneers in this program, and I just need to mention their name. Maria V, who is still with us, she's in Florida. Linda F., who we've been unable to contact. Eileen G., who's in Florida. Sharon, who had various last names. She's in Connecticut now. literally, I'm aware of three, maybe four or five. If I missed any women, I think I got the early women besides Maureen, of course. And typically, I don't have notes or anything, but I just want to remember these people. And two brothers who aren't here today, Ray T., who lives in North Carolina, and Brian T., who's in New Jersey. That man is a saint to me, an absolute saint to me. I get chills just thinking about him. And when I saw that picture today, he's a saint. He took risks. He didn't have to lay out N.A. And even before that, putting drug addicts and alcoholics together was insane. Who would ever think that you could put people like that in treatment together and get like successful outcomes? Two other people I want to mention. NA in this area was slow to seep into the black community. Ray N., who is no longer with us, said to someone named Harvey D., geez, I think you should start a meeting. And the first black meeting was at Broad and Olney. It was probably down the street at Axe, but that was the first black meeting, as far as I know, in 1981. I had short trips to Synanon in California. If you don't know anything about Synanon, Google when you go home, or Google here. Synanon was the first therapeutic community in the country. I had a short stay in the second therapeutic community in the country, and that's Daytop Village, which was in Staten Island and also Manhattan. And I'm not sure of the dates. I'm thinking probably of the late 60s. I found myself here in April 1971. And I never thought I could stop. I had no idea about recovery. There were some reasons why I came that really weren't honest reasons, but I came. And there was NA. And as I recall, it was in the Gersley Building. And it is nothing like it is today. I'm going to tell a story that I seldom tell. Danny is aware of what I'm going to say. Believe it or not, I was the president of Narcotics Anonymous. Seriously. Any meeting at that time was more like a clubhouse meeting, and we had like car washes, and for no good reason, other than to have like car. And maybe some they took us to see B.B. King at the Robin Hood Hotel, and maybe that's where the money went. But anyway, the guy nominated me for president, and I don't think this guy really was in it for the best of reasons. I think he wanted me to like abscond with the money, and we were going like split, and I believe he actually did split. I didn't. I stayed on and went in the candidate program. The thing that's very important to me at the time, there were four of us who ended up with long-term recovery. Ralph S., who passed clean, Ed F., who passed clean, and I heard he may be here today, Frank H. I came here with a nickname, a street name, and I've never told anyone, well, I've told very few people, and very few people. I found it important for me to get beyond that persona of who, delete that. She really, Dave's not happy that I said, even though it's my name. So I completed half of the candidate program, the halfway house program, and I hit the streets September 74. I didn't know what to do. I wanted to find a meeting. I looked in the phone book. There wasn't NA. There was AA. And I called the Northeast Club. There was a guy who answered the phone, thank God, Jim S. He said, you ready for this? He said, yes, I have my two sons who are in this, quote, new NA program, Danny and Mike S. And that night, and Roy P. And that night I went down to the Northeast Club. I met Maureen, I met Roy, I met Danny and Mike S. And Mike S. became my first sponsor. I got cured after a while, like Maureen. And I crawled back in 72. And at that time, there were now three NA meetings. And the third meeting really isn't mentioned. I don't even know if it's the book. The first meeting was the 13th in Ruscomb. That was September of 1972. Roy T. started. A month later, he started 10th in the Boulevard. I was in the area recently, and I drove past both those places. And to me, they're sacred areas, just like Eagleville is to me. The third meeting was at Friends Hospital. And I remember distinctly, I was in the meeting. We had a very large attendance that night. It was me, Ray T, and Murray P. And the collection was probably 75 cents. And Roy P. said something that really, I can say pissed, I'm not going. Roy P. said something to me that really, really pissed me off. And Ray T. and I joke about this sometime. That was it. And I got up, I left, and I got cured again. And I crawled back in 74, in June of 74. And, you know, I have just been so fortunate to have gotten into this program. I know there are other ways to get clean. I know there's like spontaneous recovery. People just stop. I know people can go to church, get a religion. I know that's possible. And I tried all of them. I tried every means except, you know, when I finally decided to get clean. I think I was like Johnny Appleseed because, one other thing, the first meeting in the Philadelphia area, Maureen mentioned, was in Springfield, Delaware County. And I remember distinctly, and I suspect Maureen remembers too, we were under surveillance. So in the readings that we have, we're under no surveillance at any time. In 1971, we were in surveillance. Thank you for listening, and I hope you're getting something out today. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Dutch. I'm an addict. And I came here in 1971. I didn't stay, but I went through the Canada program, and then I got a job as cutting the grass on the lawn at Eagleville. That was my first job. And the guy's name was Farmer John. And he kind of took me under, he woke me up every morning and you know, it was, I felt safe here at Eagleville. And I had left Eagleville and went out, you know, to do it my way, and I passed somebody on the street, you know, there's certain areas where you go to cop, and he was there, and he just said, all he said was, I'm holding. He didn't say any other words, and that was, I had no defense against it. They came and got me at my house. My therapist, Louie, and he was like a janitor, Roy. They came and I was hiding in my parents' closet. Tough guy, wasn't I? And they took me back to Eagleville, and I had like a second chance. And at this time, the first time that I was in Eagleville, I don't remember too much about any Narcotics Anonymous stuff. I remember people coming from another 12-step fellowship and me not being able to relate to them. And they were older. And back then, everybody that was in NA was young. It was like all, everybody was in their 20s. And I mean, we never thought about getting old. We never thought about, I mean, there was no rules. You dig what I'm saying? No rules. It was like the Wild West. Nobody told us how to have a meeting. Nobody told us how to do anything. The people that were predecessors were the ones that came out of this place here, Eagleville Hospital. And that guy over there, he went to court for me. I was facing 55 years. And he went, Murray, who was the head of therapy, went to court for me. My therapist went, that janitor went, and the guy who was Farmer John. They all went down to Delaware to my hearing. And I walked. They were having riots down in Delaware, and I was heard in the judge's chambers. And everybody was in there and it was crowded. And he said, I'm going to do this against my will. He says, you're going to walk. But if you ever come back in front of me, he says, you will do 55 years. And I kind of felt like I got my wings at Eagleville Hospital. I remember the guy, Ron, I was in a methadone clinic, and he said, you want to go to Eagleville? I says, no, man, I'm fine. I'm on 160 milligrams, and I'm doing good. And that was the Paley Addiction Clinic. And this, you know, he says, they got girls there. I says, I don't care. Don't you get it? I don't care about anything. I said, I just want to come here and get my stuff. And it was like head down period. You know, like when you go in second grade, you take a nap at school. That's what it was like. You didn't have to go anyplace else. Anyhow, I got tired of him asking me. I came here. He dropped me off at the end of the road. And he says, I'm going to give you some advice. And I said, all right, what, hit me. And he says, just be honest. And I walked away from him like, what? I mean, this is the difference between us and other 12-step fellowships. Everything we did was illegal. The getting and finding a ways and means to get more, everything was illegal. The substances that we took was illegal. But what happened is, even with everything being illegal, and knowing that we have the high initiation fee of any club in the world, we banded together, and it started from Eagleville Hospital. Make no joke about that, because I went to Fifth to Broad and Duncannon, and I'll tell you why I kept going back. Maureen, you probably know her. Pepper. Her name was Pepper, and I kept going back to that meeting because of Pepper. Wasn't about steps, wasn't about any, I wanted to see Pepper. And she was there every week. You know. I mean, that's my story. I'm not, you know, not, I don't know whatever, what all your stories are, but, you know, that was what got me to come back. Pepper. Nothing else. I don't want to hear nothing about God. I don't want to hear nothing. I wanted to see Pepper. That's it. You know, so, but what happened was, what I remember with knowing that when I went out and I had no defense against using, that we needed something of some kind of substance when we leave Eagleville Hospital. And the first meeting that I went to, I can tell you the six people that were there. One was Carl W. One was Kenny C. One was Rich M. One was Ralph S. And Jim B's brother, Bob. And I didn't know what to do. We had a book that was big. We had no idea what was going on. And we kind of still... Because Eagleville, what we learned was therapy, the therapeutic community of one addict helping another. Well, that was everybody hollering at you and then telling you that they loved you. I got 2 minutes. It's this one? Oh, okay. All right. But anyhow, all right. I'm done.
Thank you. I don't have to lower this because you were up here, right?
My name's Bill and I'm an addict.
Hey, Bill.
And I'm absolutely in awe. I really am. What a turnout, man. I'm flabbergasted, really. You know what? What I remember the most, you know, I don't remember the NA meetings here. I don't know if I was out to lunch. I was actually thrown out of here. But before I got thrown out, for some reason I had went to this canteen, and a lot of people have heard me talk about this before, but there was a canteen. It was like an information thing. People from the outside came and gave information about different things. And these two guys came, Bobby M. and Kenny C. And I was about to be thrown out, and I was wondering, what am I going to do now? Because, you know, I had something wrong with me. The dope back then wasn't that good as a lot of people can testify to. But this addict was overdosing almost every time he used. And I remember Ed F. told me that there was just a thing that some people, you know, their system couldn't handle it anymore. And I didn't do any more than anybody else. But I'm just saying what was happening to me. So here I am getting ready to be thrown out. And I shoot dope, I'm overdosing. I'm wondering, what am I going to do now? And I went to this canteen, like a last-ditch effort. And these two guys were there talking about a new program called Narcotics Anonymous. And this was probably in about May of 72. And when they talked about this, I got just a real little ray of hope. And I went to a meeting, and it was down at the church at... what was it? The address? The church?
Where?
Norristown.
Oh, 1208.
Yeah, 1208. Okay. So I went to the meeting, and you know, the thing that piqued my interest was, you know, Bob and Kenny had talked about some place on the outside where people were meeting and helping one another not to use. And that's what I wanted. But I went to the meeting. I amassed 45 days clean on the streets, and I couldn't get 2 hours before. And I got this great idea one night that I was going to go to a bar where I used to drink and help a guy I knew there that could really use what I was getting in the program. So by myself, I went on a 12-step call in a bar where I used to drink. Now, I'm a drug addict. I'm talking to this guy, you know, and I look better, you know, the weight was back in the face and everything, and I'm talking to him, and one of my old friends walked by and put a little 7-ounce glass of beer in my hand. I drank it without thinking. I'm an addict. I'm not an alcoholic. You know, and I had went to AA because, you know, back in the early days, if you wanted to go to more than one meeting a week, you had to go to AA. And they said it was the first one to get you. Believe me, I found out what that meant. I was shooting dope that night, and I was on a methadone program 7 days later. 1 7-ounce beer. And after I was out there 2.5 weeks, I left my beautiful wife, 8 months pregnant, sitting in an apartment. I disappeared for 2.5 weeks after that beer. And I hit a really low bottom. I was homeless. I was on the street. It was November. I didn't even have... I sold my coat for a bag of dope, a leather coat. Two bags of dope, excuse me. I would have sold it for one, though. But anyway, I called. I was on a methadone program in Frankfurt, and I was in Norristown. I didn't know what to do, and I thought about the people at the Narcotics Anonymous meetings. And I called Rich M. And I said, "Rich, I need help." He said, "What are you willing to do?" And I said, "Anything I have to." He said, "That's what I've been waiting here." He took me to a meeting that night, and at that time, Pottstown was started, and it was up Pottstown. I met my first sponsor, Bob, and Joe K. In fact, I still talk to Joe K once in a while. And I started making meetings. I started making a lot of meetings, and I applied myself to this program. My sponsor helped me go through the steps. And then me and Rich started a meeting at Collegeville. Now, Dutch was talking about it the one time. Thought about Collegeville, you know. That's, you know, me and Rich were always at Collegeville. And a woman back then who used to come to the meetings, Vincetta, she was very prominent in that group for a while. But I remember getting a bunch of people together way back when, and say, you know what, we got to do something about working these steps. You know, we don't have any kind of a step movement in the program. We started a step meeting. And if I remember correctly, it was at the Y in Norristown. It's a long time ago. And we met, and what we did was we took the A&A's 12 and 12, and we crossed out the word alcohol and wrote in drugs. And that's how we conducted our step meetings. And guess what? It helped. It helped. We were like the blind leading the blind. I had Dutch speak at my home group for an anniversary. It was the 25th, and Dutch made a statement. He said, I was an old timer in NA when I joined. Remember that? So I'm very blessed, guys. You know what? I could keep you here all night talking about the gratitude. My beautiful wife took me back, and she's still with me today. Three of the best kids in the whole wide world. People that know my wife know what I'm talking about. My kids are phenomenal, and their spouses. I couldn't have handpicked spouses anymore. And, of course, my nine little ones, my puppies. And, you know, I'm Poppy. So I am more blessed than and I'm retired. I don't work anymore. So I'm living large, and it's all because of Narcotics Anonymous. And you know what? I've been clean since 72 November, okay? But I still need to be there. I get fed when I go to meetings. I absolutely get fed. And this addict needs to be fed. I need that. So thank you.
Welcome back. I'm David. I'm an addict.
Get rid of this.
By the way, just a housekeeping matter. You don't have to have gone to Regalville. This is about NA. Yeah, I'm sitting near someone who said, well, I went through Chit Chat. Well, this is, you know, if you were exposed to NA, this is your time. How many of you have a letter that you wrote after you went to your first NA meeting, a letter that you wrote to your mother? I came in on a Friday. Jimmy already mentioned it. I saw him at the candy machine on Saturday morning, and I have to say that my recovery started right in front of that candy machine, because he started to tell me about his brother Bob. And Bob had 2.5 years, which was like a crazy amount of time, and he was involved in this upstart fellowship called Narcotics Anonymous. So I believe that Monday and Wednesday here on grounds were NA. We met in the canteen, and Tuesday and Thursday were AA. And so the first Monday I went to a meeting, and I wrote to my mother, had to go to NA. One of the speakers is a guy who works at the outpatient clinic, an ex-drug addict. He was a professional comedian and jazz musician before his addiction. I think he was padding his resume just a bit there. He spoke for a solid hour, and I didn't stop laughing once. Now, but think about that. I mean, I'm 3 days off the street, and I'm laughing already. He has a style very much like Flip Wilson. So for the younger folks, ask some of the older folks. We'll tell you who Flip Wilson was. He actually used to entertain a drag, didn't he? That was one of his characters. You would have loved it. Now, why was I writing my mother a letter 3 days in rehab? Because I wanted some things from her. Probably some money. Any shirts in my belongings, a green vest, rubber insulated green boots. I don't know what I thought was going on up here. And here's the best part. Any old Playboys. I think the old juices were starting to flow already. But the first meeting, Jimmy actually got out to go to a meeting the week before I did. Bobby took him down to 13th and Ruskin, and Jimmy came back and said, you're going to love NA. It's just like AA, only it's addicts. And he said, this one gal shared, and I'm sure, even though I wasn't there, I know who it was, said that she went out shoplifting that week, and she was really much better at it, that she was doing it clean. So the following week, Bobby takes Jimmy and I back down, and I walk in. It's basement meeting, candlelight, and there's the history of Philadelphia NA seated before me. I'm going around this topic meeting, and that gal puts her hands up, and she goes, my name's... and I'm an addict. I hate all you MFers. I hate this effing program. Fuck you all.
Sorry, I meant to use the initial there. And that really happened. And I thought, you know, I can fit in here. This just might be a place for me. You know, NA was small. I stayed here 6 months, and Bobby was just so good about getting us out and getting us involved. And he really believed in Narcotics Anonymous. And Bobby was a member of my home group before he died. And we gave him his medallion on his deathbed. And he loved this fellowship to the very end. And by the way, the meeting today is sponsored by his home group and the home group I'm part of called Surrender to Win. You know, it's been an incredible journey. And when you go to world conventions in NA or regional conventions and they do countdowns, you know, you get some 50-year guys and gals from California. They're a little slow getting up like Bill was here today. And then there's a gap. And then they start hitting around what would now be like 45. And you look and, oh, it's so-and-so from Philly. And that's, you know, we have a really strong, long-standing fellowship of which I'm extremely grateful. It was so much a part of my life and continues to be. So with that, anybody else in the 69 to 74 year range? Okay, well, why don't we now jump to 75 to 80? And if you're first, again, if your first exposure, it doesn't have to be your clean date. Come on up.
Hi, I didn't know we were speaking today, but I just thought I was coming up and seeing some old friends. My name's Noelle, and I came to Narcotics Anonymous March 22nd, 1975. And my brother Jimmy F., some of you remember him, he had 4 years clean. He's still clean today. He took me to Narcotics Anonymous that day. And at the time, my brother asked me if I could stay clean for just that day. It was kind of like an intervention before we had interventions. And he showed up really early in the morning, and my mother and my other brother, you know, had gotten a hold of him and said, you know, you have to do something about Noel. And so he, because he was clean, he showed up. And he was smart enough to know to show up really early. And, you know, I was just trying to figure out, you know, what I did the night before. And he asked me if I could stay clean that day. And I said, sure. You know, I was still high. And so that was an easy yes. And I did. And, you know, he introduced me to some of his friends. Linda F., Jimmy mentioned, and Roy, Pat M., and there was just a bunch of them that day that I met. And, you know, they were all happy, and they were nothing like me. And, you know, I was really struggling to even relate to these people because they were just clean, and I wasn't. And so he asked me if I would go to a movie that night, and he took me to 10th and the Boulevard. It was an NA meeting. I said yes to the movie. I didn't realize I was going to an NA meeting to see a movie called Chalk Talk. And if anybody was around back then, Chalk Talk was a movie that was done by Father Martin. And he was a pioneer in alcoholism. And, you know, they were all excited, you know, to have this movie. And, you know, it was like, you know, the old movies you saw in the church. It was like, you know, but everybody was real excited about that. And I remember thinking, I'm all of that, you know, and I really so related to that. And the next day, people showed up right away. I was very lucky because my brother was clean, and so people really took a hold of me. And you know, there was like a task force assigned by my brother, and that was getting me to NA meetings. And at the time, we had an NA meeting every night. And I'm a little nervous standing up here. I don't know why. I know all of you guys pretty much. But I always get nervous when I speak. And that's I guess for me, that's because I want to get to my truth, my core truth, and what things were for me. But anyway, I found an old meeting list when they said people were going to come up here, and I wanted to mention the meetings at the time I came in. And, you know, it was the Northeast group. That was my home group. That was Byberry State Hospital. There was the Oakland group. There was Lansdale, Logan group, Norristown, 13th and Ruscom, South Philly group, Collegeville, Southampton, Mount Penn, and Doylestown group. And we went to all those meetings. And, you know, this guy Kenny would pick me up and take me to a meeting and sometimes empty the car and go get more guys and take them to the same meeting, you know. And we would just travel around the city. And we went to Annie Lenz to get to NA meetings. But during the day, I went to AA clubhouses to detox. And I went every day. And people drove me or I hitchhiked. Back then, you could hitchhike everywhere. And we hitchhiked to meetings and whatever. And that was my way of transportation for many years. But I detoxed in these clubhouses, and I'm forever grateful to that other fellowship for that time I sat there, and they let me be sick in their space. And, you know, we went to meetings wherever we could, and at the time, there were no meetings in New Jersey, and we would take over AA clubhouses as well. And, you know, Linda F. was a friend of mine in high school, and so the connector to Eagleville was her dad, and Dick F., and Roy P., and Linda were a couple at the time. And, you know, they shared their home with me, and I eventually wound up moving in with Roy and living with Roy when he was moved on to Sharon. So it was like there were different crazy times. We were crazy clean back then. We did whatever it took to stay clean, but we also did all kinds of crazy stuff, you know. And but it was an awesome time in recovery, because the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. And and I say that because we didn't have the literature. We had the white book, and that's a really powerful little book. If you ever want to share it with a newcomer, that's the way in. And all the key information that we need is right there. And it's a simple program for complicated people. And I'm so grateful to Narcotics Anonymous. I want to tell you that, you know, last year I went to Thailand to a convention in Bangkok. And for me to see all these countries represented, CJ was there, and it was just awesome to see the amount of countries that we have infiltrated, and that speak all the same language. It's why it's so important that we use Narcotics Anonymous approved literature. And I know there's some people that want to use all kinds of stuff, but what I saw the language being the same. I saw the message being the same. And that is pretty incredible when you're looking at, you know, people from Iran and people from, you know, India and different countries all speaking the same language, the same message that brings us in here. And there's nothing more powerful than that therapeutic hug that we give each other when they walk in the door to me. It is grounding. It is godly. It is our connector, and it connects us to humanity. And we are so disconnected. I was so disconnected when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, and that hug was something so far. I was grounded. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Pete H. I was introduced to NA in. I was actually a judge, had meetings at in his courtroom. I heard a policeman bad in a blackout, you know. So part of my thing was I had to go to meetings in his courtroom, and they did the chalk talk, you know. It was the Mother Fellowship, and then but there were some people there who took me out and started taking me to NA meetings. But I would go to the meetings. I would like sitting outside the courthouse where the meetings were in his courtroom, and I would shoot dope in the parking lot of the courthouse. You know, I was in my jugular veins. I was, you know, I just didn't know how to stop, and so I didn't stop for another year. And then I came up here, and I was sleeping on a park bench down in McPherson Square, and you know, I'd come home from the Marine Corps with a habit in 1974. I was in from like 69 to 74, and I just started using the whole time, and you know, was in, you know, always in one of the rigs, you know, wherever I was stationed. And but then I came here, and I had a syringe in my back pocket. I got out of Kensington detox. It was the second time I was in there. I'd been on methadone for 6 years prior to that. And I went outside that meeting where the old admissions were after they finally got me admitted, and I took it and I threw it in the trash can, and I just looked up and I said, please God, in Jesus' name, you know, help me stay clean. And I started to, you know, that was it. That was July 7th, 1981 was my clean date. And I've just never had to go back, thank God, because of this place. This place had me. This was established then by, thank God, by these guys. You know, they were people bringing meetings in here. And so I had that advantage, you know. And I, like I said, I met some people here. They were going to put me out of here in about 45 days. They said, go talk to this dope fiend, Dennis. He's from South Philly, you know. And so the day before they were going to discharge me, because I had spoken to him, you know, the day before they were going to discharge me, somebody left AMA. And Dennis said, told Mary Ivan, why don't we give the bed to that kid that came over here, you know. And so they did. They gave me the bed. And I stayed here for another 6 months. I was 7.5 months. And I went to a halfway house, Eagleville sponsored one in Norristown. I went there for another 6 months. And I am a real example of long-term treatment working. I would wish that they would do that. They didn't put me on methadone. They didn't put me on, you know, they really, like, gave me long-term treatment that saved my life. And this fellowship, I can't even explain it to you how much it's meant to me in my life. You know, like Billy was saying, my sponsor, you know. There's, you know, I have five kids, you know, grandkids. I'm going to a party at 3:30 for my one son. I had, and you know, it's just like I tell guys at the prisons all the time. I've been doing the prisons with Kurt for about 36 years. I tell them, I said, I wouldn't trade my life with Bill Gates. And I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that. I would not trade my life with Bill Gates. And, you know, I don't have any of those things, but I have it really in here, you know. And this is where it all started for me, I'm telling you. You know, this is where it started. This is where I opened up. When I came here, it was like Disneyland to me. You know, where I grew up, like in Kensington and the East Falls Projects and Aperture Projects, it was nothing like this place. And the only time I ever seen anything like it, when I was in the Marine Corps for a while, I was in California, and we used to go to Disneyland, you know, on our when we'd have passes on the weekends. And that was because it was safe, right? Somebody mentioned it being safe here. It really was a safe place. I'd never been in a safe place. Hattie, Dennis, you know, those people that that saved my life. My friend Nunzio, who used to take me to the mall, and then he would just leave me. He had ADD or something. He would like take me there and go, Nunz, how am I going to get home? He said, that's how you get to meet people. You know, don't get you home. And he'd just leave me there. When I was in a halfway house in Narzan, like he just would like leave, and then I really had to find my way home, and I felt like a wart on the end of somebody's nose, you know. I couldn't sit with people. I couldn't be in a diner with people. I felt terrible. This keeps thinking in my head, get me back to the halfway house. Get me back to the halfway house, you know. And then, you know, it changes, man, and your life gets good, and that's all. If you come to NA, if you're just, you know, struggling here, keep coming. Just keep coming until the miracle happens. I hear it all the time. Thanks.
Okay, just briefly, Dwayne is going to come up next, but we're going to take a break. I don't like to pass a basket when somebody's speaking, so we are self-supporting through our own contributions. And we're going to make a contribution to Eagleville for providing the room for us today and the cake, coffee, soft drinks, and what have you. So the quicker that goes around, the quicker we can get going.
Yo, yo, yo.